What's up, you guys? I'm Andrea.
And I'm Haley.
And you're listening to Inhuman, a true crime podcast. Hello, welcome back.
Welcome back, everybody.
Happy Thursday. Yes, we're back on Thursday schedule for me.
Yes, I thought that yesterday was Wednesday because I went to watch the Love is Blind reunion. Yes. And I went on to Netflix and it was like new episodes Wednesdays. And I was like, isn't today Wednesday? Nope, it was Tuesday.
So if you don't follow Haley and I on Instagram, we are both huge Love is Blind people, especially this season. I think this is like the first season that you've actually watched the entirety of it, right?
Yeah, it is. And I am like full committed to finding out what happened. Like there, a lot of their TikToks keep popping up. Like honestly, my TikTok for you page right now is where is Kate Middleton and Love is Blind like TikToks.
What is going on with Kate Middleton? I was like out of the loop and then all of a sudden it just out of nowhere just flooded everything. And I'm like,
I know.
Did I miss something? Is she okay?
I know. I have like conspiracy. Gone down so many rabbit hole conspiracies about it. And I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what I think, but yeah, it's
odd.
It's been very odd. Yeah.
Agreed.
And I really want to one day cover Princess Diana on the podcast.
That's a big one. That's because you can go so many directions with that, like with all the conspiracies and
that's
stuff.
That's why I said one day.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right.
One day.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and jump into today's case. We can probably talk about whatever for 20 minutes, but you're not here for that, so we'll spare you any more gabbing. And today I'm going to be covering a unsolved disappearance case because, of course, I am. But this is the case of Allie Lowitzer.
I don't think I know this. I don't think I've ever even heard the name.
Yeah, I don't think I had either. And like the details of her case, it's pretty much there's nothing. There's nothing to go on. There's no leads. There's no, you know, smoking gun, you know, nothing. So it's obviously a case. All cases deserve to be shared. And it's one that I wanted to share with you guys because I think that it doesn't get a lot of coverage and she is still obviously missing. Her family is still very anxious and, you know, wants answers. And I just wanted to get her story out there. So that's what I'm going to be doing today. On April 26, 2010, Alexandria Lowitzer, also fondly referred to as Allie, texted her mother right after she stepped off her school bus. Allie was letting her mother know that she intended to walk to Burger Barn, which was the restaurant where she worked, to collect her paycheck and hopefully pick up an extra shift.
How old is she? Did you say?
She is 16. No, 16. Not yet.
Okay, sorry. Jumping the gun. But
That's okay. No, that's okay. That's okay. And she was like really excited about her job at Burger Barn. Like as soon as she turned 16, she was like, I want to get a job. Like I want to make money. You know, I feel like a lot of us were like that.
Yeah.
Like independent. Hey.
Yeah.
Allie also did not have the key to her house, which is unclear why. I think she typically had a key because her mother worked and she would get off the bus, you know, by herself. But for whatever reason, this day she did not have it. So her mother assured her that she'd have her older brother leave the door unlocked for Allie.
Okay.
Students on the school bus with Allie observed her heading in the direction of the restaurant. Despite the close proximity of Burger Barn to her house, which was less than half a mile away, Allie had never walked there previously. Students on the school bus with Allie observed her heading in the direction of the restaurant. Despite the close proximity of Burger Barn to her house, which was less than half a mile away, Allie had never walked there previously. So typically, her grandmother would take her to work when she needed to go because her mom, you know, worked pretty late. So her grandmother would give her a ride.
Okay. So she wasn't like normally walking to work, but this day she did.
Correct. And she was just going to go get her paycheck and try to pick up a shift. Like, there was no guarantee, but, you know, she was going to shoot her shot.
Okay, got it.
Nevertheless, Allie mysteriously failed to reach Burger Barn, never returning home later that evening.
Oh, man.
And there has been no trace of Allie since that day.
She just vanished?
Yeah. Yep.
Between walking from getting off the bus to work, which you said wasn't a far walk.
Yeah, less than half a mile.
Wow. How? Oh, my God.
I don't know. Allie was born on February 3rd, 1994, to parents John and Joanne, who also had an older son, Mason. The children grew up in Spring, Texas, which is just north of Houston. As a child, Allie was bright and imaginative, brimming with creativity. She had a passion for reading and art, and especially loved crafting with her mom.
Oh, I love that she loved crafting.
I know. I love crafting too. Not with my mom. But actually, when I was a kid, my mom and I, like, we did some serious crafting back in the day. So I take that back.
I love take that. Back. Yeah.
And I try to craft with my kids now, but, you know, it's not always. I'm a little, like, atypical when it comes to that. So, like, or not atypical. What is it?
I have no clue what you're trying to say.
Like type A. That's what I'm trying to say.
Oh, type A. Okay.
Yeah, I'm a little type A when it comes to crafting. So I'm like.
Like, what are you doing?
Eye twitching and like, it's fine. They're kids. They can make mistakes.
I feel like that's definitely going to be me when Caden is older and trying to do something. Because I'm already like, it's so hard to not correct your child when they're like not able to like put the spoon in their mouth or something, like to just let them do it. It's so hard. But it's necessary.
Absolutely. Beyond academics, she also found joy singing in her school's choir, as well as being a Girl Scout. So she was like heavily involved in Girl Scouts, like even I think at the age of 16.
Wow.
In her early teens, Allie enjoyed playing softball, and she played the catcher position, which is a tough ass position to play. Let me just say that. I used to play softball, and I never played catcher, but I had, you know, practice catcher, and it's not for the weak.
It seems scary, like the balls are just like flying right at you,
and they fly, those softball, like those pitchers, whoo, In 2008, Allie's parents separated, and she and her brother went to live with their mother. Initially, Allie felt a lot of resentment towards her father, John, after the divorce, despite him being actively involved in his children's lives. So there's not a lot of details surrounding their, you know, her parents' divorce or why she felt the way she felt. And honestly, like, I didn't do a lot of digging to try to get answers because that's such a touchy subject as is. Yeah. But I did want to include it because I think that there was, you know,
like some contention
that she was, that she had going on. And, it, you know, it's an interesting place to be in, period, especially as a teenager. And it's, you got all these feelings and hormones and emotions anyway, and then you go through that and it's just a lot of feelings and emotions. The morning of April 26th was a typical morning for Allie. She rushed off to make the school bus on time, which she thankfully did. And by all accounts, she had a normal day at Spring High School, where she attended 10th grade. Allie was very social by nature and had a wide circle of friends through which she kept in constant contact with through text messaging.
Love it.
Her monthly phone activity often tallied up to an impressive 3,000 to 4,000 texts.
Oh my gosh. I'd love to know, like, how many texts I send.
I know. I was like thinking back because, like, when I was in high school, like, cell phones were just like, not everyone had one. They were just starting to become popular. And so, and text messaging was like unheard of, you know?
But yeah, you had to pay for it.
Yeah, it was like 30 cents a text or something crazy. So nobody was doing any of that. But Yeah, I'm curious how many text messages I send now, because that's like,
yeah,
the number one form of communication, that and like Instagram DMs.
Yeah, honestly, it's probably like thousands and thousands and thousands, because yeah, like, I don't know, like I text, and you're similar too, where you like send multiple. It's not just like one long text.
Yeah.
And so that adds up, like those each count as one.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd be curious.
Yeah. But in 2010, that's pretty impressive. 3,000 to 4,000 texts.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely like you're having some fun texting.
Exactly. And there was one particular classmate that Allie shared probably more than her fair share of text messages with, and that was a boy by the name of DJ. And they sort of were dating, talking, whatever you want to call it, you know, nothing too serious from what I can tell, but there was definitely a little romance brewing there.
Okay.
After the school day ended, but before Allie boarded her school bus, she shouted to her best friend, Savannah Sky, quote, "I love you. See you tomorrow." And according to Savannah,
hit my heart out.
I know. Savannah said that she and Allie would shout goodbye to one another every single day before their school buses left. And it was like their daily tradition. So that is just so cute.
Oh, that's precious.
I know. But little did Savannah know that that would be her last interaction with her best friend before she vanished.
No.
I know. When Allie's mother, Joanne, came home that evening around 5:30 and Allie wasn't there, no immediate alarm bells rang. Joanne assumed Allie had taken that extra shift at Burger Martin that she had been after. Fair.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, you just assume that she picked up that shift because that's what she was planning to do.
Right. She quickly sent a text to Allie asking her to call during her break. But as the hours passed, Joanne began growing concerned.
Oh, we've said this before, but that fear just must be the worst thing, because it's just, you're like probably trying to think the best, like, oh, maybe she decided to randomly go with friends, or like you're thinking of all
maybe she's busy at work.
Yeah. But like in the back of your mind, you know that something's up.
Right. And it just festers, like literally it just festers.
And there, what can you do? You just have to wait.
Yeah. Wait it out. So she decided to send another text. She didn't want to bother her. She didn't want to call her at work and like make this big spectacle, you know.
Yeah, because
like,
maybe she's just working.
Right. So she said, you know, hey, just checking on you. And then mentioned that she was planning to pick her up after work, you know, at the end of the closing shift.
Right. Okay.
By 8 p.m., with still no response, Joanne decided to head to the Burger Barn because she knew they'd be closing soon.
Okay.
They closed around 9 from what I understand. So I think it was closer to 9 when she headed up there, because by the time she got there, Burger Barn was already closed and their lights out and the doors were locked.
Oh, wow. So she probably figured that it was kind of like, you know, they close, but then they have to like close up and, you know, turn all the lights off and clean up and all that. So she probably left close to 9, and then she must have gotten there like right after they finished doing all that.
Right. Because typically like you guys, if you've been here a while, you know, I worked at Chick-fil-A for many, many years and I did all of the things. I was marketing and I owned my own, not owned, but ran my own store. And typically the closing procedure lasts, you know, at least half an hour, you know, unless you're really fast or like it was a dead night. Yeah. There's tons of stuff to do. So the fact that it was already closed, I mean, that is kind of like weird to me, but maybe they just had a slow night and they were able to get out of there quickly.
Right. Like if they were able to start closing before 9 o'clock, like if there weren't a lot of people there.
Right. Yeah. So naturally, this is when the panic set in and Joanne is thinking, where is Allie?
Yeah, that's terrifying, because it's like, she wasn't normally walking home from work, so that's not an assumption that would even make sense, that like, oh, maybe she just walked home. And you hadn't heard from her for hours and hours. So, like,
yeah,
that's freaking terrifying.
And the fact that it's so close, like, if she drove there, you would think she would have passed her if she decided to walk home.
Right.
So Joanne promptly reached out to other family members and, of course, included Allie's father, John. And together they reached out to Allie's friends and even went as far as visiting some of the residences of her friends in search of their daughter.
Okay.
Joanne drives first to DJ's house, which was the boy that I mentioned that Allie was getting close with, and discovered that Allie hadn't also not been responding to any of DJ's text messages.
Okay, which is obviously concerning in general, but then to know that she was a huge texter and sent that many text messages in a month and that she talked to him in particular a lot, that's like even more concerning.
Right. So that, you know, that's exactly how Joanne felt. This was super alarming to her. So she continued to drive to other locations in search of Allie, but to no avail.
Oh my gosh. And it's like each location you get to that, like, she's hope, not there,
and that then worry just mount. Hope crushed. Like, I can't not imagine. Despite their best efforts that extended over several hours, both family and friends were unable to determine Allie's whereabouts. Subsequently, around 11 p.m., Allie's parents proceeded to involve local law enforcement, intending to formally file a missing persons report. The Harris County Sheriff's Department spoke with Allie's parents and told them to go home and wait for their daughter. They theorized Allie had likely ran away and would return home the following day, and when she did, to call them.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Okay, if you've never listened to this podcast before, this is like probably our biggest
pet peeve
that we get so fired up about, because I mean, there's so many reasons, and I feel like I'm beating a dead horse because I've said this on so many episodes, but unique to this episode, it still needs to be said. Why are we assuming that they're runaways in the first place? Why not assume that they're missing? And then if they do happen to come home, great. We lost a couple hours searching. Like,
yeah,
fine. And then also, when they're not doing things that their families know are normal, like texting and being at work and things like that, like, mm-hmm. when there's no other indication as to why they would be quote unquote running away, why are we assuming it's a runaway?
Yeah. She is a child. Yeah. Runaway or not, she is a child.
If she chose to run away, unfortunately, she's under 18, and so she can't just choose to do that. So why aren't we looking for her?
Right. So they need to look for her.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's the most frustrating thing in all of these
cases.
And
like, when is this going to change? Because we're still seeing it. I mean, I do feel like some of the like cases that get national media attention have lately, like, you don't really hear that, but that's like just the big cases. So of course they're, you know, if there's a lot of media attention, they're not going to be doing nothing. So I'm sure it's happening way more than we realize. And that is so freaking frustrating.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, can you imagine your child is missing and you know that they didn't run away and the police just telling you, just go home and wait for her. She's going to come back. Like,
they would have to probably like contain me or detain.
Yeah.
Me. Like, I would not be taking that. I mean, it's hard because you don't want to jeopardize the integrity of an investigation beginning, but it's also like, how do you get that across to them? Like, this is not a runaway. This is not, this isn't what that is.
And there's only so much that you can do as a citizen. Like, yeah, you can search, you can go knock on doors, whatever, but there's only so much you can do. You need law enforcement's help because they have more resources and the ability to, like, you know, question people or pull phone records or whatever it might be. So why?
Just why? That's
why?
Why? Why? Why? Why? Yeah. It's really frustrating. really, really frustrating. So after the officer told her parents, then Joanne asked the officer, well, what if she doesn't come home? To which he responded, call us. So call us when she comes home. Call us when she doesn't come home. But we're not going to do anything to assist you tonight.
Right. Oh, that's so frustrating.
As you can imagine, this devastated her parents. They knew Allie was not a runaway. They knew that their daughter was responsible. Not only that, but Allie didn't take any money with her. She didn't take her phone charger. She didn't take her makeup, which was a big deal for her. She had no personal belongings with her when she left the house. So if she was running away, you would think she would at least, at the very least, taken money and her phone charger.
Yeah, that makes literally zero sense. And just the fact that, like, her boyfriend or the guy that she had been, you know, chatting with talking a lot, wasn't missing. Like, maybe if he was missing, okay, maybe they decided to, like, go on a date somewhere. Yeah. But the fact that he also hadn't heard from her, like the person who talks to her the most, again, like there's just no indication that she actually ran away. So why are we assuming that?
Yeah, I hate that. You know what you get when you assume. In an interview with the Center for Missing and Exploited Children in 2020, Joanne stated, quote, it's very atypical of her to not be where she said she was going to be. So again, her parents know her.
Yeah.
She's not where she said she was going to be.
And again, the Burger Barn. Even if she purposefully ran away, she is a child. She unfortunately does not have the autonomy, like legally, to be able to just leave. So why are we not looking for her?
Yeah. And you know, when in these cases, when these children, these teens, they decide to leave, to run away, you're putting them in a greater danger because of the trafficking, because of the abductions, because of all these horrible things that are actively happening all over the world, but specifically in this country. That could happen in that first 24 hours that you're not looking for that child. Mm-hmm. So why are we not just putting forth a small amount of resources to prevent that, to prevent a bad situation from getting worse? It just doesn't make sense.
If she does return the next day, like you think she's going to, then okay, you wasted what, couple hours? Like,
yeah. I know. There needs to be more funding for police. There needs to be more. I could go into a whole thing, and I'm not going to, but there just needs to be more, period, that
there
police
needs to be more
need to
urgency
do. Yes, yes.
About people who are missing.
Yes, very much so. Especially children, but as a whole.
Yeah.
So they did not just go home and wait idly by.
Yeah.
They continue to search for her, her family, her friends. And by the following afternoon, with still no sign of their daughter, her parents took the advice of a friend that they had met through the Girl Scouts, who recommend they contact the Laura Recovery Center. So according to their website, the Laura Recovery Center is a nonprofit organization that works to prevent kidnappings and abductions and to recover victims of such events. Their center has organized numerous community-led searches for abducted children all over the country.
Okay. That's amazing.
So the center took a significantly different approach to Allie's case than the police. And without delay, they established a centralized command center, effectively coordinated multiple search teams, and mobilized numerous volunteers to comb through the vicinity.
Wow, that's incredible.
I know. The relentless efforts of the Laura Recovery Center spanned across two continuous weeks, during which they diligently carried out awareness alerts, distributed flyers, and conducted thorough search operations. hundreds of dedicated searchers, rescue teams, search dogs, ATV operators, boat crews, and community volunteers scoured the densely wooded areas, traversed the creeks, and meticulously inspected the properties in the vicinity.
Wow. So they were like pulling out all the stops, doing everything they could.
Right. They were doing what, in my opinion, police should be doing, but it sounds like they had right. more resources than the police might have had, you know,
yeah, which is that's true.
Bad. But I'm glad that these kind of organizations exist because we have such a problem with, you know, law enforcement not always taking these cases seriously or not having the resources to do so.
That's what I was going to say. We've said this before, but like, it's not necessarily police's fault. It's probably just protocols policy, that have been protocol. Put in place mm-hmm. that they can't do anything about and like would probably get in trouble if they put resources towards something that they're yeah. quote unquote not supposed to. So it's like,
right.
you know, there's it's only so much they can do.
Picture where the problem lies. Like it goes all the way, you know, to state government, federal government. There's, I could just get into it, but I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. But what should be happening is that these types of organizations should be working with police.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that doesn't always happen, but at least there are organizations like this and incredible people who do this to help people who need that help.
Right. As John and Joanne frantically continued searching for Allie, they repeatedly called her phone, desperate to reach her. After hours with no answer, Joanne recalled the GPS feature provided by their phone carrier that could potentially track the location of Allie's phone. Unfortunately, their hopes were crushed when they discovered that Allie's phone lost service around the time she exited her neighborhood.
Lost service as in either got that, turned off or?
Well, there's no way to know that for sure. They said that it either lost service, ran out of battery, or had been deliberately powered down, making it untraceable.
Okay. And the fact that it like would have just like lost service feels weird unless mm-hmm. it was like a known dead zone right. or something, which it doesn't seem like it is.
I don't think
so
it
that
was.
Makes me think it was like powered down or something like that.
Right. Which is like kind of scary because we already know she went missing in that half mile. But if it was like that soon after she left her neighborhood right. that she was whatever happened to her, abducted, taken, whatever, or even like hit by a car, like a hit and run or situation or not like hit and run. Yeah, like, I mean, anything, literally anything.
I was going to say that earlier too. Like, what if she got hurt? Like, what if she tripped and fell and like fell down a hill and was hurt somewhere? Like, yeah. That's why you can't just assume she's a runaway because anything like that could have happened,
yeah.
especially if she was walking. Like, even if it was on a popular street or something, if she like tripped and fell and hurt herself or bumped her head or something like that, she could be hurt too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it literally could be anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, they kind of hit a dead end with that aspect of it, but they were able to obtain a copy of Allie's phone records and see all the calls and texts that she had sent and received in the days leading up to her disappearance, as well as the day of her disappearance up until the point that it lost, quote unquote, lost service.
Okay.
Unfortunately, Joanne was not able to acquire the contents of those text messages. So okay. we don't really know, you know, who she was in communication with or what was being said exactly.
Right.
So while Joanne was doing that, John, her father, made his way to the school bus company's office to put in a formal request to inspect the video surveillance footage from the bus that day.
Oh, that's smart. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. And with that, he was able to definitively confirm that Allie was on the bus during the entire duration of the trip to and from school. So it was confirmed, you know, she got off the bus. Plus, there was eyewitnesses that saw her on the bus, saw her heading in the direction of the Burger Barn. So they had, you know, confirmation that she was on the bus and then got off the bus to go to the Burger Barn.
And got off at the stop that she was expected to get off at.
Okay. Right, right. On May 3rd, which is just a few days after Allie disappeared, John and Joanne went to the Harris County Sheriff's Office to report all the evidence that they had gathered. The police finally agreed to open an investigation into Allie's disappearance. They also agreed to modify their records from runaway to the more urgent endangered runaway.
Okay. But why are we still assuming she's a runaway?
Exactly. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children defines an endangered runaway as a child under the age of 18 who is missing on his or her own accord and whose whereabouts are unknown to their parent or legal guardian.
But what evidence do we have that she's run away and left on her own accord?
Well, there is a small detail, which we'll get into in a minute, that would lead them to think that she ran away. And I understand why they believe this after they did start their investigation. But basically, they went to Allie's home, gathered some of her belongings. In those belongings were some of her journals. And in the journal, Allie had expressed thoughts of running away, but Joanne explained to police that those entries that detailed those thoughts were old.
Okay.
And emphasized that she no longer felt that way, but police were pretty convinced that this was likely still her state of mind at the time of her disappearance, because as I mentioned earlier in the episode, like, she was having, you know, not the best time with her father. She was very frustrated with him, even though he didn't live with her and he was very active in her life. I don't know. I just feel like all kids kind of have those feelings, especially when they're just like going through a difficult time or struggling with a difficult situation or circumstances.
Like you said, like, earlier, there's grown. There's a lot of like hormones and emotions going on when you're a teenager, and then going through something else can escalate all of that. So, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, and I get why, like you said, like that, I understand why, and at least now she's endangered runaway, so like there's a little more urgency. But there's also a lot of things that indicate she did not run away, like the fact that none of her belongings were with her.
So, you know, despite that change in their police records, Joanne was not able to contain her frustration. And she felt that that was a superficial modification that would not significantly impact Allie's case, which, I mean,
understandable.
I think she has a valid point. Like you said, there is a little bit more urgency because they consider her endangered. But at the same time, they're still saying she ran away. So they're not going to put forth as much resources as they would, you know, say a 5-year-old that had gone missing.
Right. Or like if she was classified as like abducted or something like that. Right.
Over the years, Allie's family has sought help from a dedicated private investigator named Amber Kamik, whose theory suggests that Allie may have been abducted, concealed, and possibly trafficked.
Oh my God.
This information has been actively shared with law enforcement, who claim they have remained committed to pursuing any leads that surface. Deputy Investigator Craig Thomas from the Harris County Sheriff's Office has emphasized their unwavering dedication to search for Allie, saying, quote, "We're going to chase down the clues to see if we can resolve it. If it's not her, let's move on to the next one. Let's go back through the case and try to find something that somebody might have missed."
Okay. Well, at least they seem to be like dedicated to the investigation.
Yeah. And they've had other private investigators work on the case as well, like her family. This Amber woman, this investigator, Amber, private investigator, Amber, whatever you want to call them. They go by PI, their first name, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right.
She's just like the most recent one. And I think she has done a lot to help Allie's case, probably more so than some of the other ones earlier in the investigation.
Yeah.
But aside from her theory that Allie was likely trafficked, there have been a couple of other theories that arose that offered an explanation as to what happened to Allie.
Okay.
So there was a serial killer theory.
Oh.
Where, according to an eyewitness, Allie or someone resembling Allie had been seen talking to a man in a white truck. So that vehicle description matched the vehicle of a man named Brandon Laverne, who 2 years after Allie disappeared, pled guilty to killing two college students, Mickey Schunick and Lisa Pate in Lafayette, Louisiana. So they had this eyewitness account that it was possibly Allie talking to this quote-unquote serial killer, which they do believe that he has more victims aside from these two college students.
Okay.
But police investigated this lead, and they eventually were able to clear Laverne of any involvement. So that kind of went nowhere, and then they were back to square one.
All right.
There was also another theory that arose, and this was, from what I gathered, witness testimony from friends of Allie's, who suggested that Allie had met an older man that lived in Florida and that she had either willingly or unwillingly left with him. But this theory has not been substantiated by law enforcement.
Okay. But and I feel like
there's not.
I was just going to say, I feel like if that was the case, there would be more evident, like digital evidence of that, especially knowing how much she like texted and used her phone and stuff. Like, there would be other evidence to like substantiate that.
Right. And that is the big thing. I think that's why they were not able to confirm this theory because, well, first of all, Allie's family, they did not have a home computer. So her only form of communication was through text messaging.
Her phone. Right.
And, you know, from what they were able to gather, there was nothing of significance that arose to lead them to think that she had been talking to an older man. Now, obviously, when she goes to her friends' houses, when she goes to school, like she could technically talk to anybody through Instant Messenger or, you know, whatever social media was around back then. Because I know I used to do that when I was a kid, like go to my friend's house and talk on AIM till 3 a.m.
But would there be enough time for her?
I mean,
when
yes,
she was in those,
but she would also I feel like have evidence through her phone. Like I feel like she would have had communication with this person outside of just if it was that serious that she was planning to meet them.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Allie's father, John, conveyed that they are still Allie's biggest advocates, stating in an interview, "There's not a day that goes by that I don't think about her. I'm thinking, have we done everything we can do? What are the next steps? What can we do next?"
That breaks my heart.
I know. It's awful. In 2018, Allie's parents advocated to have the state set aside the anniversary of Allie's disappearance as the official date to honor and remember her. The observance is held on her birthday, February 3rd. In January of 2023, Allie's mother made the very difficult decision to finally deactivate her phone line, a service for which she had been paying $60 a month for the past 13 years.
Oh my gosh.
I know. That is just like so heartbreaking.
Yeah. Ugh.
Joanne felt like it was the last little piece of her daughter that she had left. Even though she knew full and well that if Allie still had her phone, she would have called home by now. To help cope with her own tragedy, Joanne now helps other families looking for loved ones, volunteering for organizations like Texas Center for the Missing and the Texas EquiSearch.
Wow, that takes so much strength to do that. Like,
I know.
I mean, I know that it probably, like you said, like helps her cope and like helps her feel like she's doing something when she can't do anything in her own daughter's missing case. But like, that also takes a lot of strength because I'm sure, one, seeing other families be reunited, upset and suffering, that like, that brings up a lot of trauma. And then also seeing families being reunited, that's got to be really difficult. But
I know.
Wow. Joanne seems like an amazing person.
We always say, like, it is so amazing when families can take such an awful, horrific tragedy and turn it into something good. Because I know, like, not everyone is built that way. Not everyone. And that's okay. Like, you're allowed to grieve and mourn and process in your own way. Like, there's no right or wrong. But it's always so amazing to me to see that, because it just shows, number one, how truly selfless you are as a person, and how you can set aside your own feelings of, you know, tragedy and trauma and be there for people who you know what they're going through. You've been in those shoes. So it's just so amazing.
Yeah. And I honestly don't know if I could do that. And I never want to know. I never
want to know either. Never, but, ever, ever.
Like, I don't know if I have that strength.
Yeah. You never know. I mean, the trauma brings out some weird things in your brain. So
that's true.
You never know. At the time of her disappearance, Allie was 16 years old. Today she would be 30.
She would be 30. Oh my God.
I know. Still so young. Still so, so young. Gosh.
Oh, that just, I don't know why that, like, really, obviously, like, I knew she was 16, but that just like really hit me.
Yeah. Allie is a white female with brown hair and blue eyes, like bright blue eyes, like beautiful, beautiful eyes.
I'm going to look up a picture of her.
Yeah. Her hair was dyed dark red at the time of her disappearance. Allie's ears and nose are pierced, and she was wearing pink braces on her top and lower teeth.
Oh my gosh, she's gorgeous.
I know. She had, like, the, like, emo look, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I love,
like,
it.
Side swept bangs and, like, dark eyeliner. And I was like, I used to dress just like that. Like, I would have probably been your friend.
I know.
In 2010, I was not 16.
But I've seen pictures of you when you were in high school, and, like, this is totally the same vibe.
Yeah.
Oh, she's gorgeous.
I know. She had a faint chickenpox scar between her eyes. When she disappeared, she was wearing a white t-shirt or spaghetti strap top, a gray hooded zip-up sweatshirt, black and white checkered skinny jeans, and black sneakers. She was carrying her cell phone, which was a blue LG slide phone, and a multicolored checkered backpack with dark colored straps. If anyone has information about Allie Lowitzer, please call the Harris County Sheriff's Office at 713-221-6000, or you can call the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-THE-LOST. That's 1-800-843-5678. There is a $25,000 reward for any information leading to Allie's return, and I will list all of this in our show notes down below. But that is all I have for you guys today. Thank you so much for listening. Please share Allie's
share
information. Let's get her case out there, and let's hopefully bring her home, because her parents deserve justice. They deserve to know what happened to their daughter.
Yeah, they deserve answers. And, like, I mean, I definitely believe that she was taken by somebody. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that she left on her own accord.
Neither.
And I mean, she could still be alive somewhere.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You just never know.
Absolutely.
So yeah, share her picture and the information about her, because you never know. I mean, we've seen tons and tons of cold cases being solved, and even some where people have disappeared and been found.
Right.
So
yeah,
you never know.
It happens. Like, don't ever second guess whether your loved one can be brought home, because we've seen cases 20 years, 40 years. I mean,
yeah,
it can happen. And it's like, I don't want to, you know, obviously we always want to hold on hope and we don't want to give people false hope, but I do think just a glimmer of hope can bring your loved one home.
Yeah. And you never know, like, what happened and what the outcome could be, but whether or not it's a good or, like, not so good outcome, her family still deserves to know what happened.
Yeah, they deserve to know. Yeah. That reminds me of I'm listening to Media Pressure, which is the
– Which amazing podcast.
Yeah, definitely.
If you haven't listened to it, highly recommend Sarah Turney, who her sister Alyssa was missing, and she has a podcast, Voices for Justice, which is another amazing one. But she created this podcast called Media Pressure, and the first season is all about Maura Murray, and Maura's sister Julie is the one doing it, and it is like
amazing.
Even if you know Maura Murray's case,
you don't know
there's
these
so
details.
Much.
Yeah, there's so many details that I was like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's really well done, and Julie is an incredible person. So highly recommend listening to that podcast.
Yeah, but, you know, just listening to, like, that case and, like, listening to all the details and stuff, it, you know, you just never know what you might have not heard, what you might have missed, and, you know.
And it's similar where it's, like, they just vanished into thin air, and where did they go? And so I'm glad that you shared Allie's case, because I'd never heard it, and – you know, it's another one that deserves to get just as much attention as any other one.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. But thank you guys so much for listening. And we will have a brand new case for you guys next week. And until then, keep it human.
Bye, guys.